with that, time's yours.
It's always great to start any edition of Time's Ours here on The Athletic, but it's especially nice to know, guys, that we're going to have lots of things to talk about over the next hour or so, and then 45 seconds after we're done doing the show, some huge piece of news is going to break.
That's usually the way it works. I'm just glad that we're all here and that we have things to discuss that are, I assume, are Chiefs-related. You're probably wondering, dear listener, if I've watched anything related to football. I can unfortunately report to you that I have yet to see something with my own eyes in person. But hey, that may change in the coming weeks, hopefully, if the Chiefs stay healthy and safe. So, welcome to the 2020 Chiefs camp.
Oh, Nate.
It's like whenever, I don't know if you guys did this, but whenever I was little, we definitely had a couple of days that, like, we had, like, a little tent, and we would either camp out in the backyard or just straight up, like, set it up in the living room or whatever. That's Chiefs Camp 2020. It's just everyone sort of camping at home and pretend you make a s'more in the microwave or whatever, and it's like, oh, yeah, camping. And then you just sort of lie to yourself and pretend that that's what it is.
Nate, I just, like, man, I wish I could come down to Kansas City, give you a hug. Because that was like the most like, well, I haven't actually seen football, but maybe at some point they might let us back in the building. Dark. It's just so sad.
Dark times.
It's one of those, you know, I probably enjoy the memory of St. Joseph more now than ever before.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
I love the people of St. Joseph. This is usually around the time where all three of us would enjoy the oyster that St. Joseph allows us to partake in. So missing St. Joseph, and just, you know, watching random Twitter clips in my kitchen. Just, I mean, this is the new reality, folks. And you're looking, like, I don't know how many of our listeners and Chiefs fans are in my same boat. But, guys, they put out anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, slow it down. Mm-hmm. Pause it. Who's on the field? Is this the second team or is this the third team? Hey, 2 days ago, I saw Clyde Edwards-Helaire getting a handoff from Patrick Mahomes. Yep. All of a sudden, 2 days later, he's dropped to, like, the fourth team with Jordan Tamu.
Jordan Tamu threw him a pass on the Chiefs Twitter account today.
What is happening? Apparently, Willie Gay Jr. is taking every snap on defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these are the things that I have to, like, you know, examine on a ridiculous, semi-comedic, but semi-kind of, like, what is really going on in these video clips, guys. So, shout out to Evan and everybody in the Chiefs video department. Shout out to Anna. Just keep sending me more clips for me to analyze as if this is like fourth down in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, hey, Evan and Anna, you said, Nate, is that right? Mm-hmm. Hey, Evan and Anna, I can get you guys my email. I won't tweet it out or anything, but if I could just watch some of it, that'd be great. Just send me anything. I'll take Jordan Tamu highlights, man. I don't care. I'm dying out here. So we have very few, like, actual football things that we've seen, but I mentioned at the beginning of the show that news will break as soon as we're done recording, because last week, the three of us and Alec Lewis, thanks again to him for joining us last week, we talked about stuff, and then Damian Williams opted out. And so today, at the very least, we waited until after the opt-out deadline happened, and we have another Chiefs player who did opt out of the 2020 season. That means three Chiefs players have decided to take that avenue. Lucas Niang opts out today, as he was the first, and I believe ultimately only, rookie draft pick to opt out of the 2020 NFL season. There was at least one undrafted free agent who signed and then opted out. I don't know if you can take this conspiratorial, Seth, but you haven't talked much yet, and so I'll go ahead and let you say what you think about Lucas Niang opting out of the 2020 season.
I have one word for you guys. Maybe
Brett
Veach
is two words, so.
I'm intrigued by this. I'm like,
maybe
Seth has not brought this to us. Yeah. This is happening in real time. So what is this conspiracy involving Mr. Niang?
I got two words for you. Yes, I've changed it from one word to two words the more I thought about it. Red shirt.
That's
He's getting
word.
A red shirt year.
That's
is that
one
word,
man?
Yeah,
you
for
know,
sure.
That.
I think in the sports context, it's one
yeah,
word.
If, now, if it is a shirt
Hayden,
of red.
Will you wear a red shirt right, today? Right. Then it would be two
yeah,
words.
Yeah, but if you're a red shirt or a medical red shirt or whatever, yeah, you'd be, it's one word then, Seth. So,
you know, yeah. College football's barely a sport. So
sure. No one likes it.
Well,
it's crazy, but no one likes
it. It's a sport. It's just, it's not a professional
Correct.
One. Although
yes.
there are
yeah, just ask
many
the
economical.
Oh, good.
Although there are many economical factors that suggest it kind of is professional.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's just keep going.
Yeah. Stuff. So anyway, I'm just throwing this out there. Obviously, I think the Chiefs are going to leave this sort of decision up to everyone. My understanding is that the contracts just roll forward a year, right?
Yeah.
And so mm-hmm. that's why, like with Damian Williams and LDT, it kind of makes things a little bit complicated next year in some ways. But with Niang, it's like, wait, you get an extra year to get healthy, learn a little bit more about being a pro, and then your rookie contract starts next year? Huh. When you weren't going to start this year? Huh. I mean, I'm not saying Brett Veach would call someone and be like, hey, look, Lucas, your chances of starting this year are, how do we say this, astronomically low. So what if we just gave you $150,000?
Which is a loan, so they didn't really give him that, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's a financial loan that will be tied to your salary, but it's just sort of put in place, and then it'll carry
so
over next year.
So what if we loan you $150,000 to keep the lights on, and you just chill? I don't know. I'm just saying. Now, do I think that's what happened? Yes, I do.
Yes, yes, you do.
I actually don't really know for sure. It just, after I said that, I was like, it'd be a lot funnier if I just said yes. It's like the whole Michael Scott thing. Does that make me a hero? I don't, who's to say? But yes.
Yes.
Yes, it does.
it's a fun thought exercise. That being said, sir, I will sort of counter that with some reporting.
Oh, that's good. Here's the one issue is I feel like I hate to interrupt you with having actual facts, but I kind of wanted to do my reverse speculation and then also answer key because you'll have the actual answer.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, Seth, I have a question for you, Your Honor, if I may. Why would Lucas Niang do that?
Because he's a team player, Josh.
Okay, very good.
Just 150% a team guy. No, he doesn't really have any real incentive to do it. So I think it's probably more whether he's got unhealthy family or whether he, you know what I mean, whether he views himself as a more risk. I'm guessing it's probably something like that.
The other thing there is that, Nate, you might actually know more on this than I do, but I don't know what level of contact these guys could have, because I do think you could create sort of the IR with a hangnail sort of thing with a player in a system like this. If you said like, hey, we're gonna get into the playbook, Jordan Ta'amu. We're gonna structure your contract to give you a nice signing bonus that's actually gonna carry you through this year, but you don't have to have a roster spot and all that. And train and work out, and you're basically going to audit this year. I don't know if there would be restrictions in terms of like coach to player interaction once a dude has opted out. Because the other thing is then like they're not getting paid, so would the NFLPA let them basically still be on the clock while not getting paid? That feels like there's a lot of I don't know how that's set up, but it feels like there would be a lot of loopholes in there.
Yeah, it is far more complicated for particularly undrafted and drafted players who have no NFL experience whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So that's one reason as to why Niang is such a rarity in this cause, because most rookies understand, one, to get to your second contract, which we've all spoken on before, the sooner you get to your second contract, the better it is for you financially, even if you have to play through a pandemic. And we obviously understand the decisions that guys made in terms of opting out or sort of putting their career on pause for clearly bigger things than playing football. But that's one part of this. I had spoken to a number of people around Lucas Niang this morning on Thursday, and it is clearly about a family situation. That the person was not told to me specifically, and I understand that this is like family related, so it's not like I have to hunt this down as if it's like a salary cap issue. Mm-hmm. So I want to make that clear to listeners. Like, I'm not really going to push his family because, again, Lucas has not done anything in the NFL. Like, his NFL experience, ladies and gentlemen, is these 2 weeks where he came to camp, saw the settings, understood, okay, how this may or may not work, and then, you know, ultimately made the decision for a family member to sort of help prevent the possibility of the virus, you know, sort of being contracted and obviously having an outbreak in his family. So it was a tough decision. I know he was thinking about it from a couple people that I talked to. It sounded like he was thinking about it for at least a week. So obviously the rookies reported to camp first. Obviously they were really the first professional football players to kind of see this because the Chiefs opened their camp early because obviously they're scheduled to play the first game of the season on September 10th. So, you know, Lucas is a pretty well thought out kid. Obviously he's gone through an injury before, like Seth sort of alluded to. Where he wasn't 100% during the college football season last year, even though he was still considered a very talented offensive lineman who the Chiefs were sort of projecting, hey, maybe you could, you know, make a run at the guard position. But, I mean, the pandemic in terms of not having a rookie minicamp, an OTA period, a mandatory minicamp period, you know, there are no preseason games. So Seth's right. In terms of it would have taken multiple injuries and him just playing out of his mind or just being incredibly perfect in practice for him to probably earn a starting spot this year, particularly once the team signed Osimile. So I think there's a case to be made that all this considered, it is sort of a redshirt year. He is going to be on the team because he was a top three pick. Like, historically, teams do not move on from rookies when they take them in the first, second, or third round of the draft until they see multiple cases of, like, it just doesn't work out. I.e., Breland Speaks. So, there's security for Lucas that he's going to be on the roster next year, regardless of what happens this particular season. And look, there could be long-term effects of this disease, and this is what it sort of boils down to. And talking with members of the team, they still want to project him as a tackle. They don't want to necessarily force guard upon him. So I think that was part of, like, if he makes this decision, that sort of gives us a little bit of not having to, you know, put a circle into a square peg. But for what I understand of it, it's a hard decision. He participated in everything, even up to yesterday on Wednesday, before making the decision this morning to opt out. But he fully knows that he's going to be on the team next season with a chance to prove himself and to get, like Seth said, fully healthy. And that can't be disregarded in most guys opting out. Like, yes, most of this comes down to finances and the uncertainty regarding the coronavirus. But if you're a veteran football player, your body's probably going to feel a lot better if you're not playing football for a year and you can come back and try to restart your career that way. And the Yanks kind of in that situation too. So we'll see where it goes. The Chiefs offensive line is a complete cluster, you know what, and it'll be fascinating to see how they figure this out in a 4-week period with no preseason games to sort of give them a clear indication as to who should start and what role should be for the top backups.
We really probably should have just started with Nate, Seth, and just let him say that he talked to people close to him first before we did our thing.
Yeah, but you know, I'm just curious what we think the internet is for. If, I mean, I appreciate Nate coming in here with facts and, like, reporting, but honestly, bit of a buzzkill. Like,
I know, I was going to say, like, I know my part is, like, essential, but is it completely entertaining? No, of course, I want Seth to fly off the wheel all the time. Like,
yeah, that's true.
And if I have to be the one to be like, hey, this is kind of the reasons for it, then that's fine. That's fine. You know, I got some other stuff to sort of share about where the offensive line is heading, and that is slightly more entertaining because I just think all of this is, like, laughable in a lot of ways because, like, who the hell knows?
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I got theories on this offensive line. Once I knew of this information and could sort of get a grasp on it all from you know, Niang's situation to obviously how that impacts the team. But, no, interestingly enough, as Seth was talking, I was like, yeah, half his theory is right. I mean, it is the equivalent of a red shirt, although that wasn't how it was designed.
Right.
When they used to, like, no one's like, all right, we're in a pandemic.
Right.
Hey, should we draft a third round pick right. to not even be with the team this
yeah.
year?
Yeah.
How about that? How about that, Bill Belichick?
That's calm. That's some 77D chess right there.
Sure is.
And I appreciate it. It's kind of like, though, like, I had people, so when I looked at Clyde Edwards-Helaire's film again, you know, once Williams opted out, which is obviously big news that I know we'll want to talk about, but, like, it was really funny some of the responses I got when I was posting, you know, video clips online and stuff. When they're just like, man, that Brett Veach, you know, he plays 4D chess. I'm like, well, I don't think that's what was happening when he drafted Clyde. Like, I didn't really know what to say. I'm like, yeah, he's smart. But, you know, it's probably coincidence.
It is. Right. So here's an interesting part that you guys both sort of alluded to. When you draft someone like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, it is assumingly agreed upon based on the collective bargaining agreement that you're going to sign that first round pick to a 4-year deal with basically a team option for the fifth year.
Yep.
Every team, unless you are just hot garbage, is going to pick up that fifth year option. So in essence, it is a 5-year contract. Now, with Niang, there's this weird mechanism. Because that was a word that we all Googled
yes.
for many times for like a couple of weeks. There's this mechanism where he essentially is now a first round pick who had technically an injured season, but you're going to pick up his fifth year option, right?
Yeah.
Like it's not exactly that, but it is essentially the equivalent of it. So, you could say that, yes, it's a red shirt. You could say that, hey, Lucas Niang could have blew out his knee in the first preseason game had this been a normal season. Mm-hmm. The one difference is because of the way the opt-out clause was structured within the new CBA, you will roll his contract over and essentially you get a 5-year player on a third-round pick, which is obviously rare and uncommon, but I feel like I've said that about 20, 100 times.
Yeah. Do you have any feel, Nate, for what the deal might be in terms of what I was sort of asking in the realm of what kind of contact can opted out guys have with teams and everything? Because I could very much see the NFLPA being like, hey, these guys told you they're not playing this year, so stay out of their way. You're not paying them.
Right.
They're over there. You know, don't ask them to come in and rehab because there's COVID at the facility or whatever. Like, do you have any feel for that at all yet?
So I am kind of taking an educated guess on this because I haven't.
That'll do. That's better than I got.
I haven't gotten this nailed down yet, but there are two classifications, and we have this on The Athletic, so you can read it in a number of stories. But we have it on The Athletic based on everything we understand of this opt-out agreement between the players and the owners is that there are two classifications. You can be a high-risk opt-out or you can be a voluntary mm-hmm. opt-out. Because mm-hmm. Lucas Niang is a offensive lineman and or defensive lineman, I feel like any of those dudes could like say, hey, I have a BMI kind of, hey, maybe I have asthma, maybe I am, you know, Lucas Niang's African-American, like, just contracting yeah. the virus itself is, like, kind of a high-risk thing based on all the studies yeah. we have. So, linemen could, I guess, submit to be at high risk. Now, some of that is part of, like, do you have pre-existing conditions that can be exacerbated if you contract the virus? Of course, that's the case. But some guys could say, if I catch it, I will, for whatever reason, be at a higher risk than, say, someone who is, you know, not 300 pounds. Mm-hmm. but if you're voluntary, I think there is a chance for you to be, there's a higher chance for you to have some level of communication with the team, whether that's both formal and informal. I think if you're high risk, the understanding is you should not be in contact with the team. Obviously, you know, the league's not going to monitor everything you do every given day. But I think high risk guys like Nate Solder should really just focus on their families, trying to remain socially distant. They can watch football. Obviously, they got guys' phone numbers that they can text in their phone, but like they just like the communication with them and the team will basically be put on pause until we hope, you know, February or March of 2021. If you're a voluntary opt out, I think there are chances for you to be involved to some degree. Now, that won't be like game planning, but like right. I'm assuming Lucas Niang may still have the chance, if he is a voluntary opt out, to get, you know, installs, game plan updates, mm-hmm. you know, things of that nature. Maybe he can see film on the iPad and still have communication with like Andy Heck, the offensive line coach for the Chiefs. So those are the distinctions. I think the league right now is even trying to figure that out itself. But that is my best guess right now on all the information I've sort of tried to understand as they were sort of moving the deadline up, moving it back. And then obviously it was today on Thursday.
The one other thing with Niang before we kind of do spend some more time talking about Damian Williams is that we've talked quite a bit, especially whenever they drafted Niang, like there's a very obvious thing that happens in 2021. It's that Eric Fisher's $14.5 million deal, $11.5 million of that could get moved off the cap if he were to be cut. And, you know, Mitchell Schwartz is at a level higher than Eric Fisher, even though I think Eric Fisher is generally pretty underrated because of being a number one overall pick and everything. Schwartz is, if you're picking pay a tackle, it's Mitch Schwartz. We all get that 100%.
Yep.
And he's making less money next year than Fisher as well. But so there was kind of the conversation of could Niang end up being the guy that plays left tackle next year if they do move on from Fisher, need to cut some cap space and all of that. I now wonder if he can prove that he's ready for that job without being there. Because that was kind of the narrative of there's no rush right now, but if Andy Heck works with him for a season and has him out there for enough practice reps and everything that you see, I think this dude can take it week one next year. Maybe you can move on from Eric Fisher and feel better about it. Seth, I'll go with you first because you looked at Niang when they drafted him and we've been watching Eric Fisher for a while. Do you have any theories on how that process might change with Niang not being out there throughout this season?
I think he might have had a shot had he been there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't see how they make that sort of decision with him unless I think that's a decision that you couldn't really make until you're like through training camp and like some preseason games. You know, like you can't do it. You just can't. Patrick Mahomes is too important, right? Yep. Yep. Now will Niang maybe be ready to do it? I think there's a possibility. His college tape, it's really hard to not, like, I don't want to get people too hyped up because we'll see how it goes, but he really was pretty dominant. And if it weren't for injury, I think he's a significantly higher draft pick, like yep. even a first rounder.
Yep.
Yeah.
Multiple evaluators told me he was sort of slotted between that 25 to 45. You know, had he been fully healthy.
Right. And going into that year, because, you know, he played injured part of it. And so I think that playing that year almost hurt him more than it helped him.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, his entire back pedal looked different. It was a whole gig. Right. And so I'm just curious. He really is super talented, very strong, moves well, great punch, long arms. And so I think he's talented enough. But I just don't know how you make that decision if you're Andy Reid and he hasn't been around all year. Like, yeah. Let's say you don't have any contact or it's limited contact, right? I mean, you have no idea. You've never seen him in a preseason game even.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's just almost impossible to do when you're protecting Patrick Mahomes. Now, they can do some things to protect him, Niang now, in terms of help and sliding and that kind of stuff. But Reid doesn't really like to limit his playbook. So I think that becomes a really tall hill to climb.
Yeah. Nate, does that check out for you?
It does for the most part. And it also has a ripple effect where I think, much like they did with Mitchell last year, Mitchell Schwartz, I assume if everything goes well, team plays well, Eric Fisher is healthy, I assume Brett Veach, Clark Hunt, and Eddie Reed are going to come to Eric and say, can we roll some money over? Can we readjust this? You know, obviously various guys have done this around you. Can you be the next guy to sort of smooth that over for the team? And another guy that this may, you know, have some benefit to, if he plays well in a supporting role or in a spot starter situation, is Mike Remmers. We kind of can get lost with him in the shuffle because, guys, I feel like the Chiefs have 15 offensive linemen, and I don't know. I only know three are starting. Three are starting. It's Eric Fisher, Mitchell Schwartz, and Austin Ryder. That's it. Everything else, you got an idea. It is totally valid at this point. But Mike Remmers appears to be the guy that they have the most confidence as being the swing tackle, i.e. the replacement for Cam Irving. Some will say that that is a job that is completely doable based on what Cam Irving put on tape last year.
That's unnecessary. That was so unnecessarily rude.
I'm just.
That's very doable. That I am stealing that just on a complete side note. I'm not going to say this player's film was bad. I'm just going to say replacing him feels very doable.
Doable. It appears very doable because Mike Remmers, as I like to remind people, at one point in time was a starting tackle for the Carolina Panthers when they reached the Super Bowl in 2015. Yep. So if he is a swing tackle and if he plays well in like, you know, four or five games, he also could come back next year on a one-year deal as a protection as you try to bring, you know, Niang up in a more, again, conventional offseason program.
Yeah. You said you have like conspiracy theories about the offensive line, so let's follow that a little bit. Like you've got you know Niang is out. We've mentioned Remmers. Martinez Rankin starts on the PUP list, as is Juan Thornhill. I think that happened after we did the podcast last week. I can't remember, but that was pretty much expected for both of those guys to don't panic about Juan Thornhill. But Rankin is there. I continually forget and then remember Greg Sinat. And I think I've probably forgotten some other guys.
Nick Allegretti.
Yassir Durant. Nick Allegretti is there. Yassir Durant from Mizzou might stick around now. He's got an easier path to playing time.
That's true. That's very true.
I think that's all of them.
I
don't think anyone can forget about Nick Allegretti, at least in my mentions. Because like any time I talk about the interior line, like, yeah, but what about Allegretti? I'm like, what about him specifically?
You get it though, right, Seth? Like it's, I mean, like it was the same thing happened for a full year of the defensive lineman who they tried to make an offensive lineman, Khalil McKenzie.
Khalil McKenzie, that's like, right.
The reason is
what about Khalil McKenzie?
What about? It's like
they draft LDT in the sixth round and he becomes a starter, like that kind of stuff. That Andy Reid just does that, so you just assume that every late round draft pick is going to be a stud.
Well, and you know, I mean, to be fair, you do have some places that feed into that. Like, you know, I'm looking at some publication that on June 20th had an article asking if Nick Allegretti can push his way into the starting rotation. But, you know, that's just, you know, that's those just what
not, happens. No, it's those asking, are publications any of us are involved in, right? That felt like shade maybe at me, and I'm like, I've definitely never written that. So that's not.
It's asking a lot. But hey, I clicked on it.
My click.
Googling it now.
Just look up Nick Allegretti.
The answer in that is no, by the way. Seth, read the story. That was a series. That was a series about the Chiefs sophomore players, and the answer is no. Read the story.
Oh, why are you such a hater?
Because I'm defending my honor of a story that I forgot that I edited.
This is the best part of this podcast.
It felt like Seth wouldn't have done that to insert other Chief site here thing. So I felt like there was an attack on me there.
Oh, it was.
It wasn't an attack. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry that headline's too sensationalist for you, Seth. You've never done that before.
You can try to backpedal, no, never. Seth. We all know what the scheme was, okay? Like, we all saw. Yeah, we all saw it coming. Yeah, we've seen it on film, and we saw it again. It's okay. But seriously,
I do get why people. It's the unknown, and that's really appealing.
And
you haven't seen someone fail,
right? And I was gonna say this too. Like, there was a time when we had preseason games last year where I think I texted Seth mid second preseason game against the Pittsburgh Steelers last year where I was like, Nick Allegretti, offensive lineman, Khalil McKenzie, gonna take some time. Gonna really.
I remember that. Take some. And I good really preseason.
Right. We thought we. I was so. And this tells you how fun my job is because you build these sort of thoughts where you're like, I'm gonna do a story on McKenzie. Like I'm gonna do it. He's been working out with Will Shields. I'm gonna do it. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna do it. I'm not doing it. Like, nope, not doing it. Nobody has told me I should do it, and I'm not doing it. And Khalil's a really good dude. He got married. Shout out to him. He's been in the XFL. He's still like bouncing around. You know, it may take. It just may take longer than some projected, or wanted, or felt that a story was going to be written that never ran. So anyway, this is way too inside beat writer.
Hey Nate, I got a question for you. Tell me which one of these headlines in back-to-back stories you think is funnier, okay? You just tell me which one of these two stories you think is funnier.
God, oh no.
What does LeSean McCoy have left? Maybe more than you think.
That was true.
Or Seth, you feisty mother bleeper, a case for unheralded tight end Jody Fortson and his unique skill set to make the Chiefs roster. Bleep off, Seth! Get out of here!
We put Jody in the preseason Hall of Fame on like episode two of this podcast.
Yeah, you were right there with me. That's when Nate called him Jody Foster.
Googling, trying to find headlines of stuff that we've written, and you wrote about Jody Foster. Hey, here's why Jody Foster should make the team.
This is not a fair fight. I've been writing stuff in this industry for like 10 years.
Jody,
be some stuff in there.
Jody's still on the roster, guys. Jody. I mean,
yeah. Watch out, Ricky Seals-Jones.
Hey, timeout. Tweet. Sorry, I got another one from August 2019. Chiefs rookie running back Darwin Thompson will be tough to keep off the field. He wasn't, Seth. He really wasn't.
No, it was tough. They had to intentionally make bad decisions and just say, you know what we ought to do, guys. After we've clearly noted that Shady had some moments earlier, Josh. You saw it. I saw it. We all saw it. But all they had to do was like, you know, Daryl Williams is consistent and not super fast. I think we're going to keep giving him the ball. And this was, it was hard. It was hard for them. They just made the wrong choice. That's not on me. Holy cow. And it was one joke. I'm sorry. Goodness gracious.
I just want us to get to November and read back the quotes of Tom Brady about one LeSean McCoy and just see how much they match. Cause you know, it's a lot to ask. That's all I'm going to say. I've really been kind of harsh this episode and I don't know why that is, ladies and gentlemen, but, Tom Brady thinks LeSean McCoy is going to be a 1,000-yard rusher and there is severe evidence to suggest otherwise, but you know, this it's the preseason, it's camp. You just say glowing things. I thought I was going to write about a guy who was pretty good in college and was just going to switch positions and on the other side of the football and think it was going to work in the hardest league to play football. Hey, you know, these things happen. These things happen.
I just Googled Seth Kaiser David Amerson, and it was an eventful search.
Hey, I said that I didn't think that was going to work out well.
You might have thought that you didn't think it was going to work out well, but you're too positive. I'm trying to find your most negative film review ever.
Please say Tyler Palko.
I don't think even that was true.
You know,
Seth Kaiser, Orlando. You probably did an Orlando Scandrick film review, right?
You know what? Yeah, I think I did. Hey, Orlando Scandrick contributed until he didn't.
He contributed to most of the Chiefs' opponents, I would say.
he contributed to some new things. You know. I see now basically, Nate, you're gonna need to carry this for a couple of minutes while Josh and I just Google headlines for things that we've both read.
Okay, Orlando Scandrick, my one memory of him was chatting with him in the LA Coliseum and me trying to acknowledge to him that, sir, it appeared you dropped a game saving interception, and he was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, Orlando, it's the fourth quarter. Like Jared, like you read the play beautifully. You cut the route. Jared Goff didn't see you. He threw it right to you, and you dropped it. And then, like, four plays later, Daniel Sorensen can't tackle. I can't remember who scored the touchdown. It was the secondary tight end for the LA Rams. So that's my one Orlando Scandrick story. Yeah. In the greatest football game I've ever seen in my life, honestly. 54-51 because Orlando Scandrick.
He just straight up refused to acknowledge that he dropped it.
He straight up, like, he was kind of like, we all made mistakes. And I'm like, but sir.
But sir.
Like, but I'm not asking about everybody's mistakes. We'll get to Daniel Sorensen in a minute, okay? Because I'm aware that he got beat on the touchdown play. I'm aware of that too. But sir, I specifically asked about your opportunity to kind of save your teammates, particularly on defense. And I'm just gonna ask another question. Hey, that happens, kids. Sometimes you ask people questions, and then you're forced to ask another one.
You're forced to ask another one. Sir, you did not answer the question. You know what? Your headlines are so vanilla, Josh. Anyway. Yeah.
Could you say, he's taking a more, cautious approach, a more calculated one? Is that what you're saying?
I am going to go with chicken poop. Is the
that anyway? Did I ever write chicken poop in an article?
I don't think. I'm sure between the two of us, we've written like 100 million words. I'm sure one of us has written chicken poop at some point.
Okay, hold on. I'm sure it's Googling at JB Briscoe chicken poop right now. It comes up with an article that says, "What's the scoop on chicken poop?"
I'm sorry, I teased you about Nick Allegretti. I was Googling Nick Allegretti, and it just so happened that the second thing, shout out for your SEO skills.
My SEO skills are on point, Seth.
And shout out for them. And that's the first thing that popped up. So I thought it would be funny. And instead, it's become this bitter war in which titles of articles that I didn't write... I don't know why you're not yelling at Brendan about these titles.
Darren.
Don't you put that on Brendan.
Again, just absolutely cowardly. We should talk about Damian Williams, all of us together. But first, I will just say one sort of last thing on the topic is Darren Lee film review linebacker acquisitions addresses a glaring weakness on the Chiefs D.
It did.
Didn't address it very well. I was like, oh, look at that issue. Anyway.
Quick story about Darren Lee. Super fine gentleman. Yes! Why am I doing the Stephen? Why am I doing the Stephen A. impression on SNL? Anyway, Darren Lee.
This is great.
Incredibly smart person.
Yes.
You know, was trying to reinvent himself in real time. By the way, his mother, TV anchor. So like, he knows news coverage in and out. Again, very good guy to talk to. October of last year, essentially Deshaun Watson, and I know. It's going to shock you for me to say his name, but Bill O'Brien picked on Darren Lee in a way that I felt was unnecessary, like just completely unnecessary. And I remember leaving the locker room and I'm like, I really like Darren Lee, but this ain't it. Now, to be fair, he was a great guy who was not a disruptive presence in the locker room. Did his job actually on special teams. I'm somewhat surprised that he's not in the league right now, but sometimes you just have these moments in sports where you're just like, you know it, I know it.
That was such a profound exhale.
I just didn't know that I was gonna become like Michael Shea.
It's just story time with Nate.
I just didn't know I was gonna be doing Stephen A. Smith's where I'm like, Carmelo Anthony, loving father, great human being, activist, Olympic champion, can't win in the fourth quarter. I didn't know I was going to be doing this. You know?
That's great.
He can't be a number one. I don't know what is happening to me right now.
Nate's just going after people. Meanwhile, I'm never going to take a stance on another player or situation ever again. I'm going to end every article with, What does that mean? Who knows?
It's up to the future is up to the player and the coaches and out of my hands.
I'm just gonna. It's gonna be like, will he play well next season? Nobody bleeping knows. Who can tell? This is my TED Talk. Football play outside of the very best players and the very worst players in the league varies wildly from year to year. This has been my TED Talk. Oh, man. And Darren Lee, man, that still frustrates me where it's like, man, you look good in coverage. Then he came to the Chiefs and, hey, look, he did his best, like you said, to reinvent himself. But people talk about, like, how he looked in run defense, like, and it wasn't terrific. There were some issues there. But, like, he struggled in coverage, too, in Kansas City. And I was watching him. I'm like,
and it made no sense. At the time, it made literally no sense.
I saw this. And so, no, that was tough. Man, this has been like a best of. I maintain that Jordy Fortson would have done great things.
He's still on the roster, Seth. He's got a chance.
He's out there.
I'm sorry. Will do.
He's going to be. Will do. It's going to be Jody versus Air. And he's going to kill Air. Yeah. He's going to murk Air, okay? And he's going to make the roster. Because there's no opponents. There is no preseason games. So it's just Jody versus Air. And I'm assuming Patrick's going to deliver the ball on time.
Yeah. I was right about Patrick Mahomes.
I would have taken you were Seth, you were. You know what?
Take a victory lap.
Take a lap. You got this one. There's your dub. I would have taken the under on 42 minutes before we started talking about Damian Williams, but you know, sometimes you make chicken salad out of chicken poop. I think did I fulfill that Google search now, nice. Seth? Will that make
we
a transcript
did it.
Somewhere?
We did it. I think it'll we did find it. It.
Damian Williams opted out like 2 minutes after he finished the show last week. Danielle finished the editing job of it, which included like so much editing in last week's show. It was a whole thing. And then Damian Williams opts out. So Nate gets a little preview on it. So Nate has talked about it here, but we haven't really gotten all three talk about it together. Damian Williams opts out and they drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire, obviously. Darrell Williams is back from injury. They added DeAndre Washington this offseason. And it's going to be tough to keep Darwin Thompson off the field, is what I'm reading.
I don't mean to laugh, but it's great setup. Great, incredible setup.
So, Seth, I'll start with you. As a man who loves every one of the Chiefs running backs, how you think it's going to look from this point forward? And also, maybe more specifically, like, honestly, what you think they are actually losing by not having Damian Williams out there for at least, you know, like, the first, whatever, half of the season as sort of the time that maybe could have been spent and maybe more of a split.
Well, since we've spent the last 10 minutes establishing my infallibility, I think it is important that I give my opinion on this because clearly when I project something, boom, it happens.
You got Mahomes. You got Mahomes right.
I got Mahomes. And let us never forget my 5-minute diatribe a few weeks ago about being right about Chris Jones. So
You're on a streak.
You get the big one.
Yeah,
I got to be more pessimistic though. Well, and then like one of the most pessimistic times.
I'm trying to give you credit. Say you were dead on with Mecole Hardman. You were dead on with Juan Thornhill. No, you were dead on with Mecole Hardman though.
I was, and I was going to say with Thornhill, that's like I zigged when everyone zagged. I was like, I don't know. And then I watched him in training camp for like 2 minutes. I was like, crap, I was completely wrong. Like, it's like, it's change of direction ability. And I watched him in camp. I'm like, man, he just ran downfield with Tyreek Hill. Well, I think he's going to be pretty good.
And then you also changed your direction. You lived and you learned.
Yeah.
I lived and I learned up until I didn't learn to apparently not make a joke about a meaningless Nick Allegretti article.
Meaningless? You think that's meaningless? I'm angry again.
Are you going to please don't Google all the meaningless things I've written?
No, I won't because Seth, that is the one hologram that I will not turn off because whenever you find out the dividing line between meaningless and not meaningless things in the world, all sports disappears.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I thought you were going to ask me if I knew where that was, and man, was I ready. I have never been more ready to discuss a topic in my life in the entirety
of this
podcast.
Oh, the line of meaningless and non-meaningless?
Oh, absolutely. And man, we were going to get into some Ecclesiastes, and it was going to be incredible. But instead, I'll talk about Damian Williams.
Perfect.
So... The effect that it should have on them early on, I think we're going to know by I mean, barring injury, all that stuff. We're going to know by midway through the second quarter of the first game. Because Edwards-Helaire is either ready or he's not. And with running back, it's very clear very quickly, right? His skill set is perfect for what the Chiefs do. Absolutely perfect. And so in theory, this actually could be, and again, shout out to Damien Williams, who's a freaking Chiefs legend. I mean, I will never forget that dude. I cried harder because of a play he made than I've ever cried because of sports. And so shout out to Damien Williams. But in terms of ability and skill set being a fit for the Chiefs offense, Edwards-Helaire might be an upgrade if what he did in college translates well, which, let me just clarify, I don't know if it will. I think it will, but it doesn't mean it's a guarantee. I'm just in here looking at the film and doing the best I can, and even the NFL scouts get it wrong like half the time, and I'm just sitting here in my mom's basement looking at film, so I mean, whatever. God, I'm like shell-shocked over here. So I think it'll be... I think it'll be fine. I think overall, it might actually in some ways be a bit of a good thing in terms of keeping the same running back on the field a little more often, maybe not trying to force carries to the veteran. And Edwards-Helaire looks really, really good. His film is unbelievable. And the thing that I would note about him is when you watch his college tape, it didn't matter who the opposition was, right? He looked like the same dude, whether he was playing Northwestern or Alabama. And that's really important in terms of wondering how someone will do at the pro level. So I don't think it's going to hurt them in some ways. If it gets Edwards-Helaire on the field quicker, it might be a good thing. The one way it'll hurt is if he's just not ready, and we're going to know that very quickly.
And I'll throw that over to you then, Nate, in terms of, like, if he's not ready, perhaps that might mean I've got a particular favorite of that group of guys. But if you generally agree with Seth's estimation there, and then what happens if there is a little bit more of a learning curve?
Right. And it really sets up what occurred on opening night in 2017, right? The Chiefs were on the road instead of being at home. But, you know, Spencer Ware had his knee injury. And again, these are different circumstances, but it sort of elevated the idea that, like, okay, you drafted Kareem Hunt. Let's see if he's ready. Now, Kareem did fumble on his first play. So if things go bad real quick, it could obviously, be up from there. But it just reminds, like, as Seth was talking, it just reminded me of that 2017 start where, okay, Andy Reid is, like, throwing the ball to Kareem Hunt on, like, seam routes. And so, again, if you're Bill O'Brien, I pray for you, sir. I pray because even good coaches like Anthony Lynn will tell you starting the year against Andy Reid is not great. Not great at all.
Yeah, this is not ideal.
Not ideal. Because even Anthony Lynn's like, I'm a really good defensive coach. I kind of know what's going on. We about to get, guys, I can't help you. 11 Chargers. I can't help you. Yeah. He did that to Bill Belichick with Kareem Hunt, who had never played an NFL game. So it is possible that Clyde Edwards-Helaire can come out and be gangbusters opening night. And I think Seth's right. The Chiefs are going to probably give him the majority of the snaps / touches to start. I think DeAndre Washington is probably a logical third down option because hopefully he's shown himself to be pretty decent at, you know, protection and being a, you know, sort of an outlet option out of the backfield on third downs. If you want to, you know, limit, you know, not overwork or overwhelm Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But I think that's the way it's setting up so far. Again, this is something that I would love to look forward to if I'm allowed to watch practice in like 10 days, guys. Yeah. But, you know, just.
I have a thought on that.
Go.
I have a thought on that. So like Andy Reid right now is having practices in which the media can't watch, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets to, now we have a completely unsupervised Andy Reid who doesn't have to even think about preseason games, who's got a month to prepare.
Lord help Bill O'Brien. Like, Lord. Who is their new defensive coordinator? I'm going to Google this, but keep going, Seth.
I don't think it even matters a little. And we'll see how it goes. But, like, because normally, you know, like, with the media out there, Reid doesn't always show everything. And they know that there's a bunch of fans that, regardless of everything they say, you know, everyone records it and posts it all over Twitter and Instagram and everything. He's like, they can just practice whatever they want all the time. And I'm telling you, I'm excited for that. Like, I would really, like, I just realized someone commented, like, the Hall of Fame game would be tonight.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, like, I would have football in my life, and I got to be honest, I get why they're not doing preseason games. I understand it. I think it makes sense. But it makes me unbelievably sad because some of these, basically all of these unbelievably fire takes that Mr. Briscoe was reading off were based on the beauty that is trying to successfully analyze preseason games, which is just delicious. Trying to do that where you're like, but is the guy he's playing, like, going to be a auto salesman next week? I don't know. But boy, did he look good against that dude. So I'm going to write about it. So anyway, that was just my little thought on the whole practice thing. Because like Andy Reid's got so much time on his hands right now where it's like, man, I don't have to worry about the media looking at anything. I wonder if Mahomes can throw the ball behind his back 40 yards. I bet he could. You know, just like that first play, they're going to line up with like three offensive linemen or something weird. And I'm here for it.
I found out that the new defensive coordinator of the Texans is Anthony Weaver. The new defensive coordinator of the Texans could literally be Bill Belichick too, and it would still not be a fair fight. Like it could be Bill Belichick too, like the cyborg Belichick, and I just don't think it would matter.
Yeah, so it's asking a lot, but yeah, I think so. I think Seth's right. I mean, Mr. Weaver, get your sleep now, because. Just get your sleep now and do the best you can. But yeah, I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire will probably be fine. Andy Reid sort of told me on a recent Zoom that like they got enough practices. I don't know if you agree with that, Josh, because I tend to like kind of want to push back on that where it's like, but coach, he literally hasn't been tackled by anybody who wears an NFL uniform. So like, I don't know about that. I get what you're saying, coach, but I also just, I don't know, dog. I mean, seems like he would need some reps in a, you know, dress rehearsal. Just a little dress.
Clyde even said in his presser like 2 weeks ago, like he was like, yeah, it's actually picking up the playbook's been easier than it was at LSU because I'm not also doing school, which I do think there's something to that. Like your whole job now is to learn the playbook and not playbook and also like chem class. But more specifically, I don't know. Leave me
maybe
alone,
I don't know. Sorry, I've never known anyone who actually took a chem class in college. But maybe it's common. Please don't Google anything I said. I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm being antagonistic today. Okay.
I took a intro to physics. I think is what my like advanced science credit was. Which was great, actually. Yeah, I felt smart throughout the whole thing. And I remember absolutely none of it. Anyway, he said that he like was having an easier time with the playbook now. And then Andy Reid talked about it on Monday, I think. He got asked about that. And he was sort of like, yeah, well, we're still kind of throwing a lot at him soon. So I think that learning curve is going to be real. But I also think it's fair to say like he can do some of it. If I made you rank the guys behind him, Nate, where would you go among those other three guys in terms of like expected playing time at this point?
Yeah, I would say Clyde up top, and this is kind of fun because it's alluding to I think what's going to be my next story. It may be out by the time you listen to this if you're doing it over the weekend. Ooh. I think I'm going to do a updated roster projection now that we know. Hey, who are the 79 guys still on the team? So I think it would be Clyde, of course. DeAndre Washington, because he has the most NFL experience, and he's, like, the veteran. Mm-hmm. Think of DeAndre as a younger, but entering the sort of phase that Spencer Ware had a couple years ago. Like, the 2018 Spencer Ware. Like, that might be who he is. I think you put Darwin Thompson above Darrell Williams just because, one, he didn't have a hamstring injury. And this gets lost just because, you know, memories fade and the coronavirus, you know, dictates our lives. But Darwin Thompson played really well on special teams around mid-December.
Yeah, he did.
Mid-December through the postseason. So you know he's going
to... Darwin Thompson is going to be hard to keep off the field on special teams was the full headline. I cut it short.
It was. You know, it cuts off on Google, you know? You just can't.
It's a character limit. So, yeah. So I would put Darwin third, and then we'll, you know, because we have no preseason games, you know, we'll, if I am able to see practice at some point in time, I'll keep an eye on Darrell Williams.
I want your breakdown also, Seth. I really like Darrell Williams, and I'm sticking with Darrell Williams because he's been in the system, and he, like, there were legit, like they were raining praise on him. It felt like Dylan McColl, the running backs coach, and Eric Bieniemy, like, were both saying nice things about him basically right up until he got hurt.
Hey Tom Brady, the Chiefs coaching staff basically said Darrell Williams was better than LeSean McCoy. I just want you to know that happened
frequently. So I am holding out hope for Darrell Williams because I also think he's more well-rounded than he gets credit for the most part, where people are like, oh, he could be like your short yardage guy. Like, he was catching passes out of the backfield and looked good at it.
Yep.
Yeah. But also, I don't think there's a ranking of those three guys that I would be, like, furious at. Like, right. Frankly, Nate, I might have literally flipped yours upside down in terms of what I would have guessed that you were going to say, and I'm still like, yeah, that still makes sense. I can still see all of them coming in those different spots.
Right, and the funny thing is, again, if I am able to watch practice sometime soon, Andy may flip it just like you mentioned. There may be one day where, you know, Darwin's with the second team offense or getting, you know, some sort of reps with Pat, and then the next day it may be Darrell. Like, there's so much, like, the two biggest unknowns on the offensive side of the ball are who in the world is playing guard, and I don't know what the running back situation is behind Clyde. But at least with Damian, you know, making the remarkable and commendable decision to take care of his mother, it does free the Chiefs up to say, like, okay, if we have to give 65% to 70% of the snaps to somebody, well, we might as well do it with our first round draft pick. It does yeah. ease that decision. But whoever behind them, it's going to be, I think, a competition for most of the year, really.
Also, because of the timing of it happening, and this, we hadn't talked about this at all, I think everyone at this point probably knows, but as Nate alluded to there, the reason he's opting out is because his mother's been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and he wants to be able to spend time with her. And, like, him being highly exposed to COVID, or at least being a chance of him being highly exposed to it, would make that, like, impossible.
Yeah.
So just that's the backstory on that, if anyone didn't know that. And also, this is a very small, I'm narrow casting now to, like, three Facebook commenters, but whenever you don't know why someone made that choice and then you call them a bunch of horrible things in Facebook comments and then you find out that their mom has stage 4 cancer, you should feel like a bleep bag. And do better next time. That's just give everybody a second. Let, you know, feel that out, and then you'll eventually find out people have stuff going on. So that's the rundown on Damian Williams. We don't have a ton of time left, Nate, but you wrote two stories within this last week about the sort of fake training camp start, if you will, because we've seen so little of it. But you wrote about Charvarius Ward and his quest to be, like, a true number one lockdown guy this year and to prove that this year, and then also just sort of some early camp takeaways. What between those stories kind of jumped out to you that people can read up on The Athletic right now?
Yeah, so I'll start with Charvarius because I feel like I raised my hand on him early. I'm like, hey, this dude might be something. He may be something. Think about this, guys. Charvarius shows up to work in a pandemic and wants to be, you know, just wants to make him, just wants the betterment of himself. And then he looks around and he says, you've never done this before. You've never done this before. You barely been doing this. You just got here and, oh my God, like, you're going to be probably suspended for the first 4 weeks.
Yep.
I gotta be a Hall of Famer now. So at least he's leaning into the idea of, like, I've got to be great immediately. The Chiefs, I feel like, have always put so much on Javarius from like the day he first got here, where they're like, learn the playbook, learn it. I still remember.
Hey, it's your first game starting. Why don't you start against Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett? Let's just see how it goes. And
Doug Baldwin was just like, who is this guy? One of my favorite memories was just Javarius being like, coach, but why? And don't forget too, he had to guard, you know, Super Bowl MVP Julian Edelman one-on-one on an island because Bob Sutton was like, you got it, dog.
I believe in you.
So again, the Chiefs have put so many burdens on Javarius Ward, and he's kind of risen every time. But this is kind of like the...
While he couldn't see, just throwing that out
there. Yes, before his eye surgery that he got this offseason.
Yeah, shout out to Sam Bellinger, who's been tracking that story. But like, yeah, I mean, the whole time, the Chiefs are just like, be better. And he's like, sure. And now this is the ultimate test. Thankfully, you know, a guy named DeAndre Hopkins won't be on the field on September 10th, but for the most part, a lot is going to be placed on Javarius. So that was the most interesting thing I thought from the Zoom calls, which is why I wanted to make it sort of a separate story. And then with the way this campus started, y'all, I might say it once an episode. Guys, if there are no preseason games, and you're only practicing against guys that you will get familiar with by, like, I don't know, the third practice of an extended training camp, offensive line play this year might be garbage in September. It really might. And so I'm going to sort of evaluate this as we go forward, but I just want you guys to know, the Chiefs may not score 50 on opening night, and it probably will be because the offensive line is just ain't hit nobody in a live setting that wasn't already on their team. I will make the argument right now, and then I'll pass it off to you guys as to what your theories are. But I asked Andy, how do you get offensive and defensive linemen prepared when, one, it's a contact sport, two, you're trying to prevent them from getting COVID, and three, you have no preseason games? So I think it is the best project to just pick five offensive linemen right now, and those are your five, barring somebody testing positive. Don't be doing, like, Andy and Andy Heck have been very, I think, smart in saying, like, we're going to cross-train people. Like, hey, what happens if Austin Ryder twists an ankle? Okay, well, you've had reps at the center position, you know, throughout practice all year. Then
Nick Allegretti could find his way into the starting lineup, some would say.
But I think now it's just like, if you want chemistry, timing, protection calls to be right, protecting a guy with, I don't know, the largest contract in American sports history, just pick five offensive linemen and just practice them to death so that when the game is actually mattering, they are as most prepared as you possibly can be. And then you'll cross-train guys as the regular season moves on. But that is my concern from everything I learned earlier this week while not seeing any real practices.
Seth, what are you thinking? Either on Ward or the line or whatever.
I think that Ward has been asked to do a lot. And that first start, I felt so bad for him. Because I don't know if I've ever seen a cornerback get, not even, he didn't get beat. It's just like, hey, did you know if the quarterback throws a perfect rainbow 50 yards down the field, it literally doesn't matter how good your coverage is?
Welcome to the NFL.
That was... Well, yeah, everyone's like, oh, Travarius Ward was getting roasted. I was like, man, he was basically like inside the jersey of the player he was defending. Like, sometimes when my wife's feeling obnoxious, she'll come up to me and she'll like insert herself into my shirt. Like, it's a weird deal. I wish I hadn't really gone this direction. But like, she can like
that. I'm gonna speak for Nate and Danielle. That makes three of us that wish you hadn't done that.
Yeah, they're like jumping up in the air and I can't shoot. Oh, I got nobody to pass to.
Right. No. I think I actually hit my face on the backboard there as I was going up. But I thought I had a sweet dunk there. So anyway,
tell me more about this scene. Paint this picture again, I guess.
Well, no, like, you know, like she can just pull my shirt out and like just like, because she's small and like, you know, like when you were like when you were kids and you and your siblings could both fit into one shirt.
Go on.
He's not good.
Oh my gosh. I let the silence hang there just because it was so funny. Holy crap. That was so funny.
I'm just trying to see where you're going with this.
Yeah, no, okay. you're still hanging in the air right now, Seth.
Okay, so anyway, as I was saying, the coverage was excellent on the
you
play.
You still did not explain that well enough for me to have any idea what you're talking about.
So no, like from the bottom of my shirt, like she can like get... I don't know how to describe this in a way that doesn't sound horrendous.
How does this conclude is my question. Yeah.
Well, where are you going with
then
this?
Both of our heads are out of my neck hole.
That's
I think we're done.
We
did
it, everybody.
It,
we found... Yeah.
Good podcast.
Yep. All right. Well, good podcast, everybody. And I'm I mean so we're done sad. That you just heard the last episode ever of Time's Ours. We're done with the show, period. What if we edited it to where it literally just ended after Seth said, both of our heads are coming out of my neck hole, and then the podcast just ended, there was never another episode.
No explanation.
It was just...
No
it
music,
was like, it
just
was the
quiet,
Sopranos
yeah.
cut to black. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I
All right,
am
finish
sweating.
Your point, Seth. Finish your point. Finish your point,
okay.
you nasty pervert.
What? I'm the one being assaulted here. I don't know why no one's yelling at my
We're
wife.
We're being assaulted by your words.
So anyway, Ward had great coverage. He was asked to do a lot way too early. Nate's exactly right. In terms of the offensive line, they need to pick five guys. I think it should be probably Wiley on the right and Assembly on the left at guard. Mm-hmm. And just have Ryder in the middle unless someone has an unbelievable camp. And just like he said, just rep the crap out of those guys. Most of those guys, you got to remember, have been in the system for multiple years, right? And I think that gives them an advantage over other teams, but it's still going to be very, very difficult. I'm guessing Reed tries to scheme around it opening night in terms of asking them to just be in specific places. Reed likes to call plays where you've got spot blocks. I don't know what he calls them, but I mean, to where you're supposed to get to a certain spot, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to blocking a certain player and trying to do everything in synchronization. And so I think they'll do a lot of that. And honestly, I worry a little bit less about this than some people because I just keep getting told that with offensive linemen, a lot of them, they just worry about their job. It's just one dude worrying about the one job, and you can't worry about what everyone else is doing around them. The great, venerable Mitch Morse told me that, and I'm still sad. I miss him. But so I'm not as worried about that as you are, Nate, but what do I know? I mean, I've got my wife coming out of my neck hole, and there's all kinds of crap going wrong. So what do I know? I thought Jody Fortson would maybe make an impact.
Red zone threat.
Red zone. Jeez.
Oh. All right, so... So Nate, here you go. I don't know how you wrap this up, but here's what I'll tell you real quick. You can get 40 if you're not subscribed to The Athletic and not getting everything from The Athletic right now, 40% off at theathletic.com/timesours. You can follow us on Twitter @ByNateTaylor, @RealMNChiefsFan. I'm @JBBriscoe. You can tweet at us or about the show using the #TimesOurs. That's the show. Don't pop out of anybody's neck hole.
All right. Well, as you guys know, you know, this podcast has been somewhat unusual because we're in unusual times. I just want to bring everybody in the podcast locker room. It wasn't pretty, guys. It certainly wasn't pretty. But if I have to, you know, we got through it. Obviously, you, the listener, just incredible job by you. Incredible job. But there's one person we got to give a podcast game ball to. That's producer Danielle. Everybody clap it up for Danielle. This woman has put up with us for an entire year, folks. It is her 1 year anniversary this
really?
Week.
Yep.
Oh my
in
god.
In the Athletic. Danielle, we do it for you and we say sorry.
Yep. And we're all very sorry. Danielle on three! One, two, three, Danielle!
Danielle!
Danielle!